This week on Barbell Shrug, we talk about adjusting your training volume so you can get insane results.
Hey, this is Rich Froning. You're listening to Barbell Shrug. For the video version, go to barbellshrug.com.
I thought you were just eating the beans.
I ate all the coffee.
We're live. I ate all the coffee. Welcome to Barbell Shrugged, episode 95. I'm your host, Mike Bledsoe, with my co-hosts and best friends, Doug Larson and Chris Moore.
Thanks for that.
You guys have been rather CTP affectionate today, hasn't he?
I love you too.
It's because we've all been traveling a lot. We haven't got to see each other very much. And before we got the show started, I just had to share with my friends how much I appreciate them.
So. It made me feel good.
I made Doug feel good.
On the inside.
Empathy and compassion, man.
Real quick.
Namaste.
Today we're going to be talking about strength volume.
He doesn't know what that means.
Oh, he does.
Strength volume, all right? All I know is I say it at the end of the yoga session.
Like, namaste and shit. Thank you, teach. Thank you for stretching me out. My chakras.
I want to get this out there. We're talking about strength volume today. We will get to it eventually. First, go to barbellshrug.com, sign up for the newsletter. We're going to teach you about the 8 snatch mistakes you might be making. Before we go any further on the actual content, where you're going to learn something, I just want to say, I went to the American Open last weekend, and it was awesome. I had a great time. I got to hang out with people like Kendrick Ferris, John North, Travis Mash,
Kanye West,
Diane Fu, Justin Thacker, Christmas Abbott. Yes, I saw Kanye West in concert.
It
was pretty cool. Yeah, I had a very full weekend. I hung out with some awesome people. One of the people I just listed off, Travis Mash, who I'd never met before, got to have lunch with him one day. Man, we just hit it off, had a great time. Ended up going to a party that night, and I think one of our next episodes will be Travis Mash here in
Travis.
The very near future. Really? We're going to be traveling to North Carolina to hang out with him.
When I was at the peak of my powerlifting years, he was one of the best lifters around. He was like a new Ed Cohen type guy. Great, great, great efficient lifter. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah. I also met a little girl, Elle Farr.
Yeah.
That's not her first name is Elle. That's what she goes by.
Elle.
Yep. Her last name is Farr. She's really, really cool. She came up. Her and her dad came and talked. Russ. And they came and talked to me. And she does jiu-jitsu and CrossFit. And
so awesome.
Don't exactly remember how old she was. But it's really cool talking to her because you could tell that she was like really interested in everything going on. She followed all the CrossFit people, all the weightlifting people. You could tell she was really bright. And
because she liked you. She likes me, so she knows where talent is. She's got a good eye.
If you agree with me, I think you're smart.
Well, she went around and took pictures with you and John North and Kendrick and everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't have the balls to do that when I was 12 and 12. That's awesome.
When I was a kid, I would be terrified. I'd be very intimidated. But she was really bright. I talked to her a few times over the weekend. I really enjoyed it. So if I see you again, Elle, come and say hi again.
And it's so awesome to see a new dawn, a new era, if you will, where little girls are idolizing weightlifters. I never thought I'd see that. It is awesome,
crazy, yeah.
Dude.
Yeah.
It's ridiculously awesome. And times they be changing.
If you want to hear exactly what went on that weekend, I think I was on the Weightlifting Talk podcast for maybe a total of 3 or 4 hours. So split into 2 different episodes. And you can find that on Spreaker. Just look up
Weightlifting Talk. And you have a
talk.
Whole episode about it on your brand spanking new awesome podcast.
Yes.
Let's hope you have.
Yes. I actually did talk about it a little bit. I was really worn down, and I wouldn't advise listening to that episode. No, but go listen to Weightlifting Talk.
Great commercial for your show.
My show sucks. You should check it out.
It's basically just the sound of my beard rubbing against the microphone for 45 minutes.
You'll like enjoy this. It. If you want to be introduced to some new tunes and some of my ideas on life in general, Bledsopia is the podcast you should check out.
So there's your warning.
Yes. But I got to hang out with some awesome people. There were some moments where I'm staying in a circle of a lot of the younger weightlifting coaches, and we were having really awesome discussions about the future of weightlifting. It was a really exciting weekend. There was more people registered for this weightlifting meet than any weightlifting meet in the world. It was like, I think we broke a world record. It was four, was it 453 people were registered for the American Open this year. They didn't know what to do with everybody. Spoon Barbell put on the meet. They did a fantastic job of managing it because it was a lot of chaos.
The weather's bad. How many people showed?
There was quite a few people who didn't show, and I actually think that might have helped the meet go a little bit smoother because it was
A gigantic weightlifting meet.
Started early on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and went into the late hours.
I've been up half the meet. The latest one I ever saw, one year at the IP Nationals, I lifted. My flight ended for the deadlift at like 11:45 p.m. when we quit deadlifting.
Oh man,
that's how. And
we started
like at 9:45 a.m.
The way powerlifting works is different than weightlifting because you're done in 2 hours. In powerlifting, it's all day long. It's too spread out. I don't like it.
Yeah, and it's all this intense. Like it's 12 hours of rah 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 rah. Oh, come over loudspeakers and bald guys with goatees being way too aggressive with each other.
Yeah, heavy metal for 12 hours straight.
It gets frays the nerves.
By the time you get the deadlift, you just want to go home.
Yeah, 4 hours in between events is way too long.
Yes. All right, let's get on to the topic at hand. Now that we've talked about the American Open, powerlifting, all that mess.
So what was the original question that spurred this show?
Actually didn't copy it down. Yeah, somebody was asking asking for how to adjust volume, increase volume for beginners. So someone who's starting in training, how do we adjust the volume? Where do you start with the volume?
So today we're specifically talking about how to adjust volume for strength. And then maybe we'll come back another day and do an episode on how to adjust volume for your conditioning.
The nitty gritty of how to add work, right? How to get better at doing work. We're getting into the...
Conditioning and strength are a little bit different. So yeah, we need to address just the strength today. And then maybe on the next episode we'll do conditioning.
Mm-hmm. So why is adjusting training volume important then?
For progress, Doug. We all want to get better. Yeah. So
you got to embrace change in your heart.
If you're that person that has a hard time just walking up the stairs, obviously walking up two flights of stairs is better than walking up one flight of stairs yesterday. That's progress.
And when should that person start 2-a-days?
Yeah, it's, when I was in college, we had this class where we had to talk... We were coming up with...
They made us talk.
They made us talk. It was terrible. Horrible. But we had to come up with like these discussions. Like if we were to go on the news or something and discuss something, what would it be? What do these people need to hear? And this one girl was like, I would talk about the risks of overtraining. And I'm like, no.
Oh, great. Thank
like,
you.
This is not...
The 0.00001% of athletes need to hear about that.
More than likely... Nobody is overtraining that you're talking
Listen
to.
Listen up, America. You could be doing too much work. That no one recognizes that as a problem.
But it does happen in CrossFit. People, I wouldn't say they're overtraining in their volume overall. I think frequently they train too high a volume in a very small, domain.
Too much of one thing and a whole lot of not a bunch of other things that they need to be doing.
They either do too much weightlifting or they do, more than likely what the case is, they're doing too much conditioning or they're doing too much long conditioning, not enough short conditioning, not enough speed work. So there's a lot of variables there. And it's important to not overtrain a specific area, but more than likely the total volume's not that high.
Yeah, the easy thing to do as a beginner is to come in, do blog programming, just Metcon all the time, strength train maybe once or twice a week. And then eventually you kind of get sick of Metconning, realize that strength is your limiter, and then you kind of backtrack and get on a regular strength program. That seems to be the kind of the standard development or stages of development that I see with brand new CrossFitters.
Yeah, I think it's because when people discover CrossFit a lot of times, the Metcon is just, that's what's so different and so fun.
And you're right. Sexy, right?
Yeah, you're right. Like, it doesn't take very long. You get... so good at the conditioning aspect, and all of a sudden, what is limiting you is your strength.
Does seem to be the psychological hook for new CrossFitters. Even if that's not ultimately what they need to be doing, is just Metconning every day. If you want to get someone started on CrossFit, just let them Metcon a whole bunch. They'll get plenty of progress on
really
just
quick,
doing that.
Quick progress, satisfying progress.
They'll get some quick progress. They'll get the experience of really pushing themselves to the limit, which a lot of people just simply aren't used to doing. And they'll be like, this is super, super fun. And then they'll keep doing it. And then they have to go through that process of Metconning too much, realizing they're not making progress in the long run, because their strength isn't high enough, and then they'll cycle back on their own from having that experience, and then they'll decide that they need to focus
it's
on
a
strength.
Calibration process.
Yeah, and you don't get there until you've had the experience. So, you know, we do this all the time on the show. We try to convince you need more strength, and the people that have had that experience are like, yeah, that's what everyone needs to hear, and the people that haven't had that experience don't listen to you at all because they don't understand, they don't have any perspective on why that's important. So if you're a very unique person, you could probably skip that phase and go, okay, well, I don't need to worry about my conditioning and I can just start on mostly strength and some conditioning. But most people need to have the experience of doing it wrong first before they'll backtrack and focus on strength in the beginning.
Yeah, the latter is more likely.
Unless you're coming from a strength sport already.
Right. And I think that actually doing Metcons is a way to like get that initial volume. I mean, if you're doing, you know, really light front squats in a conditioning session, that's probably a great thing. If you're not someone who squats a lot.
So yeah, lots of practice on a new thing.
It's a great way to get a lot of reps in. So and it's a lot of fun. So it can be a good way to kind of intro. Mm. Even though you may feel like you're focusing on conditioning, if you do a lot of thrusters at 95 pounds and your best front squats, you know, 165 pounds, you're technically, you're almost there at strength work.
Yeah, beginners can make good strength gains off as low as 40% of their max. If you are truly brand new to any type of weight training, if you've already been doing other types of lifting, if you come out of bodybuilding or powerlifting or weightlifting, well, you're not in that category. If you are just plain brand new to training, you've been sitting on the couch for 10 years, then you don't have to go in and lift, you know, five sets of triples on back
anything.
Squats. You can just Metcon and get stronger.
It won't matter. It won't matter for like months probably. You could pick up medicine balls and set them down and you'd probably get better.
Right. So in the beginning, you don't need a progression. If you are truly brand new, you don't need a progression. You just need to train.
Get used to doing work.
That's it. And so just starting is more volume for you. Right.
Yeah.
Just working out at all is way more volume than doing nothing.
I think people need to go, okay, I'm going to train three times a week. And then your next step shouldn't be like, well, what reps and sets and how much weight should I be? Maybe you should just try to train 4 days a week at that point.
Yeah.
And then 5 days a week. And then once you get to 4 and 5 days a week, that's probably when you need to start really considering those progressions, what you're talking about.
I think the simplest way to describe it is you get in shape to then train. Like you prepare yourself for what comes later, which is this more regimented thing that, you know, once you've sort of polished off all the big chunky edges, now you start doing the refined work where you're counting more often and the math is more important.
And that's actually one of the big arguments that CrossFit's been making for a long time. If you like check out the CrossFit Journal, they talk about GPP, mm-hmm. general physical preparedness. And people, a lot of coaches, if you look at like a lot of sport specific coaches, football, you know, these people that are doing speed training or something like that, a lot of times the GPP is not there. And if you just raise the GPP, everything else rises with it. And I think a lot of times people are too quick to move out of a GPP program and move into something that's sport specific, or they're trying to improve this one little aspect of their fitness, when if they just get better general physical preparedness, the whole potential rises.
That goes for advanced athletes too. Like I know football teams now, they're starting to dabble with things like CrossFit. They're not doing anything fancy. They're just doing basic, like when you play football, you do one kind of thing for so long, so intensely, like the same strength and conditioning type approach with the sprints and the lifting and the bad power cleans. And these guys have been doing that for so many years that at some point for them, you get a big benefit from going back and being a beginner again. And just doing things like a guy who's been playing in NFL for 5 years, get you a big bang for his buck by learning how to do just the most basic CrossFit movements, because he's doing a whole lot of new things on underdeveloped qualities.
Yeah,
it's like new for him. He's a beginner in this regard. And this work, the simplest thing does him the best good.
Even if you're not, I mean, and getting outside of that. So for football players, you know, they need to be really strong and fast for 10 seconds. You know, I think a lot of people get caught up in that. You know, we need to train for those 10 seconds. It's like, it might be beneficial to do a 10-minute Metcon for that guy. He may raise his potential in this other aspect of fitness if he just focuses over here for a little while.
He's not doing something so hard either. He's just moving for 10 minutes intensely, but not beating himself up, which is all he ever has experienced in his competitive career and training career.
I do think you're spot on about adding days per week first.
Yeah.
What we do at Faction is we put people through a 4-week fundamentals course where it's 3 days a week. So it's 3 days a week for 4 weeks, and then we tell them to start the regular classes, and then they're kind of up to their own at that point. They can do 5 days a week or 2 days a week or whatever fits their schedule. But what we recommend for them is to stick with 3 days a week, because the regular classes at our facility are going to be more volume than the fundamentals classes already. So that's an increase in and of itself, even though it's still 3 days a week. Yep. And then we recommend they do 2 days on, 1 day off, 2 days on, 1 day off. And then once they start to not be so sore, they're sleeping just fine, they feel like they are handling that volume just fine, usually we tell them maybe another 3 or 4 weeks at that volume. Then we tell them to bump up to either 2 days on, 1 day off, 3 days on, 1 day off, and they alternate back and forth between those two, or just to go straight to 3 days on, 1 day off, which is kind of like the standard CrossFit recommendation. Mm-hmm. That way they're training most days of the week. If you're training less than 5 days a week, then getting to at least 5 days a week probably is the very first thing that you should be shooting for. You don't have to skip to it right now, but that's what you should be building to first.
I think you touched on a really important point, which was sleep and recovery. And I think a lot of times people are quick to increase their training volume when they haven't mastered recovery yet. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times people are, you know, they want to get more results, so they want to improve the results by improving their volume.
Minimum effective dose and then dose response and recovery. You got to keep that in mind. It's not the work, it's getting over the work.
Yeah.
That makes you better.
Mm-hmm. You know, if you're getting 5-6 hours of sleep a night, going from 4 days a week to 5 days a week of training is probably not your next best step. Mm-hmm. You know, it's getting 8 hours of sleep a night and eating high quality foods. So just keep that in mind as we talk about this. You know, adding volume may not be the next best answer for you.
Yeah, if you're a more advanced athlete, granted this show is kind of catering to beginners, but if you're a more advanced athlete, your program should probably be the last thing that you change. Right. You should be making sure everything else in your life is on point and you're recovering to your full extent or to recover as best as possible, whatever that means for you, and then changing your program is the last thing you should do.
Yeah, I don't know how many times I've had athletes, you know, I've got, say, for instance, 20 athletes on a training program, and 19 of them are getting stronger, they're getting faster, they're breaking records, and then you got the one walks over and is like, I think there's something wrong with the program.
He's usually the one not sticking to it.
It's funny. Like,
but then I go, well, how much are you sleeping tonight? Are you getting high quality food? And we're like, well, this thing came up in my life. I'm like, okay, the program's the last thing we're going to talk about today.
And my girlfriend blew up in a fireworks accident, but I wanted the Fran time, man. I had this thing in my mind, like, get that time. I
hate it when that happens. Those firework accidents, you know.
Well, they were cheap and, you know, water damaged.
All right.
I had a point. I was going to say something so important. I'm like, well, I got the fireworks thing came on my mind.
All right. So once we're training 5 days a week and, you know, and we're showing up and we got our recovery mastered, you know, what's our yearly plan look like? Are you going to have fluctuations based on competitions or?
So assuming you're a guy who wants to, or guy or girl who wants to compete. Sorry, ladies. Almost left you out.
They're like, wait a minute. Oh. Okay, Doug, this time, man.
Doug tends to do that.
Very sexist.
Ladies, I'll never leave you out, I promise.
We don't trust that beard, though. Good luck.
Assuming you want to compete in the open and you are basically treating this like a sport and you have a season, which is usually kind of that March, April, May, maybe beyond that if you do really well, you want to cycle your training volume over time. So we'll talk about kind of how we do it on a monthly basis and how we can even do that on a weekly basis here in a second, but for the most part, after the open or the regionals or whenever your season is over, then you're starting to ramp up your strength volume. And it's probably going to peak late in the year around November, December, maybe January, depending on how much strength you need to gain. And then your strength volume might go down a little bit and you're going to start ramping up your conditioning volume in the probably 12 weeks out from the open or regionals.
This is something that one of the big differences between I just want to look good naked training, and I'm preparing for competition.
Oh, you just,
you know, this annual competition.
You know, you just reminded me of Ripito's article. You want to talk about the good, the bad, and ugly of CrossFit? You said
I didn't read the whole thing, to be honest.
But everybody likes to throw these out there because it stirs up a lot of shit. But one of them is that, hey, listen, everybody. Okay, you need to understand that CrossFit is exercise and training is training. And most of these guys who are really impressive at CrossFit, they're actually training. They don't do CrossFit. This is, I hear it a lot. That's a criticism people make of CrossFit, is that it's just exercise. And what we're all talking about here is how, for a lot of people, that's exactly what you need more than anything. It's exercise. It's,
right.
It's motion. It's movement. It's accumulation of general movement patterns and work. And that, yeah, there's a time for doing the training, which comes after you've gotten really good at exercising. You know, you're getting in shape.
Yeah, I just want to throw it out. Like, if you're
it's
not,
the most obvious thing. It's true, yeah.
If you're not training for a specific competition or a season, then your training might look different. You might have a more even balance between strength and conditioning throughout the year. And for me personally, I prefer that type of training because it doesn't beat me up so much. You don't get into these deep valleys and peaks and stuff like that, and you feel more...
Exercise, you know, is not a dirty word.
More stable throughout the year. So, yeah, I definitely prefer exercising to training. But once you get to training, like Doug was saying, you know, there's parts of the year where there's a big focus on strength, and then there's these big variations, and to change gears can be painful sometimes, and the potential for injury there is really high too.
Mm-hmm. So what about each month? So a mesocycle, the fancy word for that. Ooh. Usually we do 4-week blocks. We call it mesocycles.
Hashtag, holy shit. Doug said a word people might not know.
The year long was a macrocycle. The 4-week block is a mesocycle. And then the weekly ones are microcycles.
When did we start educating people? I know. This is crazy.
It's craziness. So usually we do 4-week blocks. What do those 4-week blocks look like for the most part? Just talking about volume.
Just volume.
How's it fluctuate from week to week?
What do the little bars look like?
Like a butterfly. Yeah, the volume thing is hard to talk about. It's definitely easier if you have a visual representation, which you can see a visual representation if you signed up for the 6-month muscle gain or for the Red Regionals. Like the launch videos, the videos that we had that were informative to teach you about that, you can go to those pages and we put together webinars where we explain that. So it's not, you can go look at those.
Is that your answer to that, though?
Yes, you can. Answer the question.
We're doing a show. So people want to ask, like, what does it look like? Online and search for a video.
Don't worry.
What do you want from us?
Don't worry about it.
I don't have time to explain this shit. What are you talking about?
About to answer my own softball question.
What have I been reduced to?
All right, week one, you'll have, you know, low volume, lower volume. Week two, medium volume. Week three, high volume.
Right. What happens on week four?
Oh, fuck.
I forgot.
And week three, this is where you might start feeling beat up. This is where you don't feel real, you may not feel your best and all that. And then week four is a deload, or as Chris likes to say, unload. Because he says there's no such word as deload. But during that deloading week.
Hey, can you help me deload the truck? No, I can't, weirdo. What the fuck is that supposed to mean?
The computer will try to tell you that deload's not a real word when you type it out. I've learned that.
Like Microsoft knows what they're talking about.
Yeah, they're a bunch of nerds. Mm-hmm. But
no nerd's gonna tell me how to live my life.
So the fourth week, you know, you go from you build up this progression. You have, you know, lighter volume, medium volume, high volume. And then on the fourth week, that's where you actually adapt. You know, you take a break. You're still doing the movements. You're still doing about half as much as you did in that third week. But that's your time to rest. That's when, you know, you might go into the deload week, unload week, feeling a little beat up. By the end of it, you should feel really good and ready to start ramping back up.
And it's not set in stone. You could do 2 peaks to make yourself a little bit more tired and take 2 weeks of down to kind of play with how you respond and see for you. For the sake of knowing when you peak and how you peak best, play with those. You could, maybe 3 weeks is enough. Maybe 5 works for you better. Yeah. You could go 6. There's no golden rule.
I find younger athletes can go 5-6 weeks without that unloading week.
That's not you and me.
And older guys, like 2 weeks. So after 2 weeks, sometimes
we're old meat, man. We're tough. We're gristly. That's not us. I was gonna say also, I would share another. So there's that classic ramp: easy, moderate, heavy. And that's when the fatigue starts and you drop and then you get the bounce. That's the classic great thing that works most of the time for most people. When I was powerlifting, my favorite thing to do is actually a little bit of a tweak. And Jim Miller recommends a similar thing in 5-4-3-1 for powerlifting. So he makes this same switch, which I thought was amazing because he found the same thing independently, which means we must have, like, totally found something worth, like, you know, writing down.
And he must be a genius.
Yeah, yeah, right? So it's actually week one is the medium. Week two is like a light, like right. a speed week.
Okay.
Primed week. And you go really heavy and then you rest. So it's like it's a slight dip than a ramp.
Yeah, you see that with some weight.
That's more traditional than what I've done over the years. Yeah, like medium, very high, like, and then I think I remember low.
Dr. Andy Gallup and I used to really talk about like hit it really hard and then rest and recover and do like a speed week where everything needs to be exposed as possible and then come back up and then crush what you did the week one.
Yeah. See a lot of weightlifting programs that do that. It's a, you know, moderate, light, yeah, you get, like, heavy as hell,
momentum bump,
and then yeah. you take your deload. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can get really complicated, or you can just
and it works really good.
Ramp up, and
I think it
deload.
Works best when you need a break from the constant. Like you've been doing like 4 week blocks for a year of the same ramp up down. It's a good just change.
I don't think that's a problem for most people.
All right, so we took something that was very easy to follow, and we added a bunch of examples. Now it probably sounds confusing. So so let's back up to the original example. You basically ramped up. You did 1 week here, 1 week here, 1 week here, and then you had a deload week. So maybe you did 3 sets of 5. And then 4 sets of 5 the next week, and then 5 sets of 5. And then that deload week, maybe you just did one tester, you hit a 5 RM,
right.
and then you were done.
Yeah, actually.
So
really,
one set of five, basically.
Yeah, that's exactly how I like to do it right now a lot of times is just that. You know, let that deload week be when you look for that new 5 rep max or something like that.
So usually you're resting, and at the end of your deload week, that's when you're testing.
Yeah.
Yep. So you were saying something similar, but slightly different. So using that same you know, sets of five example, like how would you do the example?
You could start with like a good hard tough 3x5 session, mm-hmm. and then you could do a session where maybe did like 3x3 or like 4x2, like, you know,
on week two.
Yeah, like this less work, but you know, maybe with the focus being moving a little quicker and like, you know, but week three, then you could do like a 5x5 week, a really tough week, mm-hmm. and then you got week 4 to recover. So you can do a little more on that hard week if you do that. Like there's a little bit less of a cumulative where like you can hit it really hard, acute and strong in week 3 if you do that like that way.
So for you to oversimplify this, in your example, you're going up, 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 down.
Right.
Up, 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 down. And in your example, you're going kind of up, down, up, down, up, down. But every fourth week, the down is a little bit more down.
Yeah. And then
more
the highs,
down, more down
the highs
in the second week.
And then highs, you can get a little higher. You know, it's a little bit, you know, more spiky. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So if we use the same example, it might be like 3 sets of 5. And then 5 sets of 5, and then 4 sets of 5, and then 2 sets of 5. Does that make sense?
No, you're kind of medium. My coffee ran out there.
Very high, high, and then low.
Yeah,
and then medium, very high, high, and then low. Okay, so that's what that's what monthly looks like. You can do a million different variations within that little system or within that concept. But really, the easiest way easiest way is just to go. Up, up, up,
down,
deload, up, 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 deload.
Yeah,
however you want to think about that.
You know, the principle is that you ramp up and then you deload, ramp up and deload. That's never going to change. What can change is, you know, week to week, like what you were talking about. And what can also change is the duration. You don't have to do 3 weeks and then the fourth week. You can go 5 weeks, 6 weeks. You might need it after 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think it's really important you keep like that. You got to be very observant and write a lot of things down, take a lot of notes, collect a lot of data for yourself. Like when you add a week, if you go from 3 to 4 or 4 to 5, you extend things, you shorten things, you pay attention to how long it takes you to warm up, how your strength is responding, how you feel, how you're recovering, you know, your perceived soreness. Like you got to keep notes of all this so you know, okay, for me, you know, it really does look like 3 is, it works, seems to work a whole lot better. That's how you start getting into the real data. Like no one can tell you exactly all these potential possibilities we're describing. No one can tell you exactly which one's optimal. There's no such thing as like a perfect one of these things.
Right.
You play and you get, okay, I really like this pattern. It seems to work for me. I'm making good progress. And
it can change. Say you start getting more sleep or you change your diet and you start getting more calories.
It's just not
then you might
set
be able
thing.
To go another week before you deload or something like
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
So
especially for beginners, I just used the example of 4 week blocks, but beginners might not need to do a 4 week block. They might not need to deload every fourth week because they're not as beat up as some of these more advanced athletes might be during that fourth week. They might be able to go 6 weeks or 8 weeks before they really need a deload week.
Yeah. And another thing I like to mention as well is, you know, if an athlete comes to me and goes, oh my God, I feel like I'm really being pushed mentally here. I'm like, well, it's the 5th day of the 3rd week and deload starts tomorrow. Go ahead and hit this training session as hard as you can, you know, and then next week you'll get to recover. If that same athlete comes to me in the middle of week 1, there's a problem. That's when we know we probably dug the hole too deep. And we overreached a little too far.
Weak. And you need to get them out of your gym. Like, you know what? You can't take the training. You're not good enough. Leave. Leave this place and never come back.
He's joking, folks.
I'm hoping I was cut carrying. Let me hold my quotation
for I don't know.
Yeah. I'm being serious.
The voice of someone who's never owned a gym. Yeah.
Disregard everything I say.
Chris, what do you like to change? Sets, reps? What is your way of increasing or decreasing volume? I mean, we were talking about the example was 3 sets of 5, 4 sets of 5, 5 sets of 5. Do you like to stick with sets of five, or how do you like to change things around?
I think I'd rather add more. I tend to add more days than sets and reps. Like, I usually work up as quickly as possible something that's really heavy, like for squats. So instead of 3 sets of 5, go to 5 sets of 5. Well, usually I always work up to a single or double or triple, and I'll just add days when I want to do more work. So instead of doing it 2 days a week, I'll go to 3 days for squatting. And then when I really want to do work, maybe in the summer when I'm feeling better and the days are longer and I'm eating a little more food and everything's more optimal, I can try to squat maybe 5 days a week. So I would say I add frequency, not sets, like in one workout, because I think it's easier to recover from.
So with adding something like more days a week of squatting, you're not building up to a 5 RM 5 days a week.
No. Like, I believe in doing as much as you can in the most balanced way possible. So when I'd add a day, like, let's say I do a back squat on day one. You know, day two, if I want to squat like on Wednesday, if I'm going from Monday to Friday to Monday, Wednesday, Friday, the workout I would add in the middle of the week would be the easiest thing to recover from. So that's a perfect day to add like a front squat, because if I'm still tired from back squats, I get tired in a little different way for front squats. So I'd add the easiest thing to recover from. So like, I'll add a lot of front squat work if I want to up the volume, because it's hard for me, because mechanically I have a tough time being vertical and working that position. But for that same reason, I don't get too beat up. So I can add more and ensure I can recover from it.
Yeah, I think you'll see something like that in a lot of weightlifting programs too. Yeah. You'll see Monday, Wednesday, Saturday, you know, you're doing the full snatch, you know, the squat snatch, and you're doing a squat clean and jerk. But on Tuesdays and Thursdays, you're doing a power clean, power snatch. You're still practicing the movements, but the total volume that you're doing is lower. For one, you're going to do lighter weight with a power snatch or a power clean versus the squat. And the range of motion is different.
I think Glenn is good at doing that, Glenn Finlay. So if you look at a group of lifters, you say, those guys always max out. That's one thing you're seeing. They're doing as much weight on an exercise as possible. But the type of exercise is so important, because if you go from doing, you know, if every day you did clean and jerks to max twice, it'd be really tough. But yeah, if you do clean and jerk to max day one, and then like a high hang clean to a max day two or three, or whatever, you do a lot less weight on one. It's quotation marks max effort for you, but you can recover from it better.
Maxing out a lot. So like different movements.
It's not this idea people have about Bulgarian training where it's like every day you show up to gym and you lift heavy barbell. No excuse. No walk away. No life after a barbell. No, that's fucking shit. It's too intense, right? You can go heavy all the time on exercises that are tougher. So you're not getting so beat up from it. So yeah, very important detail to understand.
All right. So if I wanted to get bigger and stronger, how would the reps look for that versus, or bigger?
10x10 German volume training.
There you go. Yeah, that doesn't not work.
That's exactly what I was about to say. That's exact wording.
That's a great
way
of describing it, right? It doesn't not work.
Yeah. It's not the funnest training in the world. But, you know, if you're wanting to get bigger, how do the reps and sets work for that versus you want to stay the same size and get stronger? How would you change that, Doug?
Getting bigger versus just getting stronger and not getting bigger at the same time?
Right.
So you could play that game two ways. The training could differ, or maybe it could not differ, and you could just change your diet. With some people, when they're trying to get big or get small, they might keep their training the same and just adjust their diet. In one case, they gain muscle mass and get a little bigger. In one case, they lose a little bit of body fat and get smaller. That's super common. In my case, if I'm training for an MMA fight, usually off season, I'm trying to get as big and strong as possible. And then when a fight approaches, my training pretty much stays the same. I'm trying to stay as strong and as explosive as possible leading up to the fight. I adjust my diet and then I make weight.
Yeah.
So you don't necessarily have to change your training program, but changing your diet is a huge factor there. So yeah, if you're a beginner, like I said at the very beginning of the podcast, training with as little as 40% of your max can still help you get stronger. So sticking with the kind of the hypertrophy or the bodybuilding rep ranges, if you're doing back squats for, you know, 4 sets of 8 or 3 sets of 10 or whatever, is as kind of cliche as that is, and we make fun of that a little bit. Not because it doesn't work, just because we like to, you know, poke fun at like the old ways of doing things, even though kind of like you guys were just saying, those ways still work. So if you're a new person, sticking with something like 3 sets of 10 will still work. So you can do those hypertrophy rep ranges and get really good progress off of it. You don't necessarily have to jump to like 5 sets of 3 heavy to gain body weight. You can do lighter weights as strength training.
Yeah, I think athletes can see years of results from that in the beginning. You know, it, not increasing, you know, increasing the reps, you know, in that 8 to 12 rep range. And if you want to increase, you know, more, if you want to raise the volume, add another set of 8 to 12. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe we don't want to drop below 8 reps per set, and we can go pretty high on the reps and increase the volume that way.
If you're going to make a bad mistake, is that you start adding too much weight too soon before you do the work, before you put in the effort.
Yeah, with a more advanced athlete, I would prefer to add volume by adding, you know, the sets instead of the reps. Maybe keep the reps, say, at 3. We're going to do 3 squats. Mm-hmm. You know, we may do 5 sets of 3 today, and then we're going to do 7 sets of 3 next week, and the next week, 9 sets of 3 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the more advanced athlete, and the athlete that doesn't want to gain as much weight, maybe they're not looking to be in a hypertrophy phase, I prefer to do it that way.
That's my favorite way to add volume for kind of like the big bilateral movements for heavy cleans, deadlifts, squats. I like adding more sets, less reps, like you're saying. Yeah. So stick between kind of 3 and 6 or 3 and 8. Three reps to 8 reps per set for those, the big lifts, so to speak.
Yeah.
And then for the hypertrophy rep ranges, like I was just talking about, I like to do that for like the assistance movements for things like lunges and glute ham raises, overhead, strict overhead pressing, things like that, especially for beginners.
Faux cheesy. All right, let's take a break real quick. When we come back, we're going to talk about how we can actually put all these program stuff together.
Are we going to whisper the second half of the show?
We're going to whisper.
Oh, good. We'll talk about it. Add in like a all right sound effect at the end of that or something.
Shaka bra. Fired up. Welcome back. Here with Doug, Chris, and CTP.
Your friends.
My friends. I you know what? I really want to say that we're all friends, because I did have someone come up to me at the American Open, and it was really, really funny. And he goes, "Are Doug and Chris friends?"
Why you Chris? Chris Moore?
Yeah.
Well, what's somebody say?
I think everyone recognizes that the two of you are so different from each other. They're like, do they actually hang out? I was like, yeah, we all hang out. We're all friends.
Like, there's no way those guys like each other.
So yeah, it was funny, because I was like, it never occurred to me that we wouldn't all be friends. But I guess some people out there think that maybe we just meet up, do the show, and then we're like, we go our separate ways, and like, fuck those guys. But no, we all hang out. We were hanging out last night. We had a good time. Right. So just want to throw that out there, because it was
Paul Abdul said the best, opposites attract, and that's true in this case. Doug and I have a very intimate relationship, actually, to people who would question our relationships. Very intimate, very kind and loving.
We go to each other's houses. We hang out.
Yeah, it's not. So. You're not seeing anything fake here. I mean, we're bro-ing it out.
It just really blew my mind when he asked. I was like, why would you think otherwise?
Well, people can probably feel like when Doug's like, Chris, shut the fuck up. And his brain energy is sending out that kind of...
Yeah, that's probably what it is.
Well, that's fine, because he's right.
Don't worry, we all discussed this off the air. Yeah. So, Doug, how do you know if we're training enough already? How do we know if our volume is where it needs to be? Or
save us.
I suppose the simplest answer is, are you making progress? Which means that you should be testing something and measuring your progress.
Things should be changing in some ways that are discernible to you.
That's right.
What about using my Fran time?
There's nothing wrong with using your Fran time. You just need to pick something and use it consistently. But today we're talking about strength specifically.
You should probably pick something that you want to get better at.
Yeah.
As your benchmark test.
That way you know if you're getting better at it.
Don't pick a random benchmark WOD and make that your benchmark for success when you're doing strength work.
I've been squatting so much and this thing's not changing.
I'm squatting so much my Helen time didn't get better. Squat and Helen.
Yeah, you don't need to pick Fran just because Fran is a CrossFit standard. You need to pick something that you specifically need to get better at. So
that you give a shit about, like whatever matters to you, human being.
Yeah. For strength, I'd recommend picking one lower body lift. So a squat, a deadlift, clean, snatch, pick one, just one, and then for upper body, I would pick one type of pressing and one type of pulling. So maybe pick weighted pull-ups, cleans, and strict overhead press, or seated behind the neck press, or something that's
very... Love that seated behind the neck press.
Preacher curl.
I like seated behind the neck press because it's very raw. It's very hard to cheat. You got to have a lot of mobility to do it at all. It's a great test movement. Training it, maybe shouldn't train it all the time. It might beat you up a little bit, but that's a whole other track.
So now you bring that up, I want to do that more often.
It's a good test.
Since you and I can't do that, so.
A seated behind neck press.
We should get better at that. Wait, I can't press.
But I really find
you can't reach behind your neck.
So. I find the isolateral seated hammer press is really great.
I can do those.
Of course you can, because it sucks. It's stupid. You can also you can also shit and make Cheerio bowls.
Right. So if you don't even know what that means. I'm skipping past it.
Bowls of Cheerios.
So
we have too much coffee, man.
Are the bowls made of Cheerios?
In my dreams, they are. Think of it. A bowl that is made of Cheerio that contains Cheerios.
Oh, no.
You went meta just then.
So you know what that means?
Sorry, guys.
That was a good old-fashioned derail job.
So if you're tracking your progress, if you're writing down what you do, if every Monday you do something, you know, 5x5 back squats, the first... working set of five you get to, you're probably trying to hit a new 5 RM each week. So a common thing that you like to do or that you like to program is build up to a 5 rep max and then take 90% of that and do 4 more sets of 5 or something like that. So every week you're hitting a new 5 RM. If you're tracking your progress and writing down what you do every week, you should be able to see every week if you're hitting a new 5 RM.
Yeah,
even
that case,
if it's not a tester.
In that case, I really encourage people to be conservative and going higher each month. Sometimes I program that and people go... they try to go for a 20-pound PR over the last week's 5 RM. I'm like, go for 5 pounds. Don't get crazy. You only got the rest of your life to get stronger. Relax.
Right.
Hey,
so
man,
chill
out.
It doesn't have to be a 1 rep max necessarily. It can be a 3 rep max
right.
or 5 rep max. Or you could pick the same weight you did last week and see if you can get 6 with it instead of 5.
Right.
Or whatever you want to do. Whatever you feel like you need to get better at, if you can program that at least every 4 weeks, maybe every 8 weeks, at the end of your deload week, test it, see if you got stronger, and then you can make some type of adjustment. And it might not even necessarily be more volume. More volume isn't the answer forever. You're not going to go from 5 sets of 5 to 6 sets of 5 to 10 sets of 5, 20 sets of 5, 30 sets of 5.
My favorite way
that we're talking about, I think that's what's going to happen. Huh?
My favorite way of making progress right now, and it's such an obvious, beautiful thing, is actually to do to go for the same weight or the same amount of work, like the same thing, 5 sets of 5 squat or a heavy front squat single or a snatch, but to do that, to perform that rep more and more perfectly, so do it better and better and more crisp, and also do it more and more in a relaxed state, so more and more of a routine. Like the best lifters, I was showing Doug some lifters pregame, you know, that's what we call the before the show period. This Russian guy, Beristov, 2004 champion, but he lifts the huge weights, bro. Oh God, the huge weights. But he does it so calmly and so reserved. Like he'll do like a 200 kilo push press triple, and he'll drop it and he'll go, yeah, all right. But see, when you do that, when you get used to lifting, if you can get used to lifting the thing that's heavy for you now in a routine way, then once it's time to compete, or once your boys come over for training session, or once you go to a competition and the energy gets picked up, you're expecting that for just a little bit more to be hard. But then when all that energy hits, because you get this huge reserve now, you have a surplus. You can draw that out and you can really surprise yourself what you're capable of. Like when I go, if I train in the garage, you get really, really focused and really, really reserved and get strong, keep my strength. But going to the gym, man, it makes for a really great workout. So I think doing things more and more simply, more calmly is also a way to make progress. It's just an idea.
Yeah, I mean, if your snatch went up faster and smoother, that's progress.
And it was easier for you to do.
No, I think a lot of times people get caught up in the weight, and basically what you're describing
is... it need not be just more.
You know,
more is not the answer.
Improve your finesse.
Yeah.
Be a ninja.
Improve your finesse. Be a ninja. We need a t-shirt with that on it.
So how do you know maybe you're doing too much? What if you're maybe trying to bite off more than you can chew? Like, what's a sure sign of that's happening? How do you recognize that?
I don't know, if you show up to the gym and the barbell feels heavy, Some days you show up and the barbell feels like nothing because it's basically nothing. And some days you show up to the gym, you pick up the bar, and you're like,
if you're Doug, the bar's like nothing, but you know.
You came in whistling and you leave with your head hung low.
Yeah, I mean, some days the weights just feel heavier. And some days the bar just seems to move effortlessly.
But even on some of those days where the bar feels heavier, I mean, I find that I've hit PRs on days where, like, as I'm warming up, I go, oh, no. This is definitely true. Sticky situation, you know?
Your body definitely can trick you. You feel like you're tired and you PR that day. And that does happen. But if you show up every day and every day you're like, fuck, I have to train again feeling like this.
Yeah.
Too many days in a row, it eventually will come to bite you. So if you feel like shit consistently day after day after day, not just one day where you come in and it feels heavy.
Handy tip. You should only feel like shit and then anchor it into the bowels of despair only some of the time.
That's right, some of the time.
Other times should be all right.
But again, the real answer is, are you making progress? If the weights keep going up, then keep doing what you're doing. There's no need to make a change. If it ain't broke, don't fix it, that type of thing. So measure your results. If you're getting stronger, keep doing what you're doing.
I think also Chris brings this up. He's brought up a few times on the show, but I say we bring it up again. The canary in the coal mine.
The jump test.
Could you inform people of this test that you can perform to see maybe today might not be the best day that you go crazy?
Yeah, so the problem with strength is that if you're not getting weaker, that's a good sign. If you're getting stronger, it's a real good sign. But if you're not getting weaker, that doesn't mean you're not, you know, suffering or not recovering the way you should. And a more sensitive way to test how things are going, you know, it's not definitive, again, because sometimes you're going to be a little tired, fatigued, and that's okay. But in general, you can use things like a vertical jump as a metric, as a quick, like, temperature check for how you're doing. So if you find, you can easily measure your vertical jump. If you got something fancy like a digital pad, great, that measures the time you're off the pad and down. If you got just...
That's the best way.
You got a Vertec thing with little plastic things you jump up and hit, great. If you just have a mark on the wall, you put some chalk on your hand, you jump up and you slap it, and you can get higher or lower, and you just measure the difference. But if you see that going down, if it's just one, like Doug's making a point, if it's one transient thing, like I feel like shit and I don't jump as high, that's okay. Just make note. Plot it out in an Excel spreadsheet, like put the inches up, how high did you jump, and to make a little scatter plot. If you see it going down in time and all the strength things are staying the same, that's your sign that the overreaching is sort of settling in, and you're okay. But you might want to plan some rest. And
yeah,
if you
see that going up,
then you're seeing the underlying fatigue coming and going like a wave, like a tide in and out. So I think it's a great idea. Plot vertical jump. Just do that as you do whatever training you're doing. Just as a way to objectively assess if you're getting better or not. Because if that's going up, you're getting more explosive and fast.
The barbell Buddha barometer. Hey, hey, hey.
Whoa, man. But yeah, you can see if your program is working by if it's actually, it should go up and down, but trend up. If it's not, then something's wrong, man. And that's the most sensitive way I think you can see that happening.
I really like
the
that.
The fitness and fatigue effect is the most sensitive way.
By the way, that little pad that tests the time and time of flight, mm-hmm. It's actually cheaper than a Vertec.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's like people who buy Vertex, I'm like, what are you doing? Just buy that pad. That's way
who
easier.
Knows, man?
It's a way easier test.
You know what we should do?
The only thing I like the Vertec for better is the fact that you're like trying to reach and hit a little bit higher than you did last time. So that's a benefit.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's like an iPhone app for like holding your hand and jump and it could know how quickly you're coming up and down. Reading.
I heard if you tape, they have an app for that. You tape the phone to the bottom of your shoe.
I had a hard pee there. Sorry. I fucking put coffee into the microphone. Yeah. Wear military boots. Tape your phone underneath the boot. And then
Well, you've heard about someone tried to play a joke and they made an app for your iPad that's a scale. And you just... Your iPad and I'll tell you how much you weigh.
Well, there was another one too. Like it had something to do with like throwing it or something. Like you throw it and it would tell you some information.
How far can you throw your iPad? Let's find out.
Oh shit! This is a dumb idea. I get it now. No, but I wouldn't be surprised if you could make that. Like, okay, I'm gonna hold my phone and jump. Oh, and it says you're fat.
Oh, all right, so if more volume isn't the answer,
did you leave Earth?
What else can you change?
Oh, sometimes you might want to go with less volume, and you might want to change the intensity that you're training. What I mean by that is the percentage of your one rep max. It might be more beneficial for you to do that. Another thing you can do is change the amount of time you're resting between sets. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times you say, hey, rest 3 minutes between sets. Right now I've got a lot of the weightlifters. We're in a little bit different phase of training. We're not about to compete. anytime soon. A lot of them are doing every minute on the minute lifts, you know,
which I love. So, man.
We're building fatigue, you know, it's density training.
High density training.
Yeah. So even if you're not changing the total volume, just switching up how you do the movements might really help. So instead of doing three sets of five with a 3 minute break, maybe you do doubles every minute on the minute for 7 or 8 minutes. It's basically the same thing, but not quite the same thing. And maybe your body reacts to that slightly different stimulus and you spur a little bit more progress.
Yeah. So there's two methods that I kind of like for changing that aren't the reps and sets type of thing. One is the density training. And I like that for a more advanced athlete, somebody who has really good movement patterns already.
Yeah, you got to be able to get tired and not have your form break down.
Exactly. And then for the people who, you know, for the newer people, tempo squats, tempo presses, doing tempo work is kind of the other way to do that. And that's, I like that better for newer people. And in fact, we still do tempo work, you know, pause squats, stuff like that. It's not just for newer people, but I prefer that density training model more for change for an advanced athlete. But the tempo, that's something like, you know, take 4 seconds on the way down, pause for 2 seconds, take, you know, come up as quickly as you can. And so, you know, you have time for your down portion, a time for the pause at the bottom, a time for your up portion, and then a pause at the top. So you have 4 different segments of time for your tempo. And this week you might do 3 seconds on the way down, 2 second pause, come up as quickly as you can, 1 second pause at the top. And then you could keep the same sets and reps for next week, but just change the tempo. Yeah, you can just say, hey,
4 seconds.
We'll take 4 seconds on the way down this time. And so you can add volume over time, or you can raise the intensity by making the total time with the tempo smaller and adding a little bit of weight. So those are a couple of ways.
I also like doing it within a set. So I've done squats where I'll do, you know, that speed rep weight, kind of like, you know, maybe 75-80%. Heavy enough to be heavy, but not too heavy. And I'll do like two reps as fast as possible, like in a squat where I'm trying to get a good rebound and time it good. And then I'll do the third rep where I go down slower and pause and then come up explosive. So changing the tempo with even in the same set. There's so endless ways to play with it.
Yeah. If you're doing 5x5 and you end up plateauing after a while, you just said a second ago, doing less volume, that doesn't mean you're working less hard. If you do 5 sets of 3 instead of 5 sets of 5 with heavier weight, you're doing less reps, but it might be potentially even a harder workout and you get even more benefit from doing 5 sets of 3.
And maybe I shouldn't throw this out there, but I'm going to. We didn't really mention it.
You're a rebel.
We talked about volume, and basically that's the amount of reps that you do in a workout or a week or a month or whatever. We should have put that at the beginning. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. How much you're doing.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, that's what volume is.
Yeah, we'll just put it at the beginning. Go to the end first. No. And then, but I want to mention volume load, and that's the amount of reps you're doing multiplied by the weight you're doing. So if you multiply that, you're going to get a better picture of how much work you're actually accomplishing. And so, you know, if you're doing less volume, but you increase the load, you could technically be doing more, a higher volume load total.
And it's not the way it feels. Like, you can feel like you did more work with like 5x5, but if you did like 20 sets of 2 with more weight each set, you may not feel as tired, but that's a lot more work done, you know?
So we talked a lot about volume, and that's a really good way to get into it. But eventually you're going to want to start looking at volume load as well. Maybe we'll do a whole other podcast on volume load.
Yeah, volume load. Hardcore volume load episode.
Yeah, the reality of it is that changing your training volume really is just one of many different things that you can change about your program to spur progress. So it might be one of the first things you start with, but after a while, you can't just do more. You have to do something else. And usually that means changing the exercises, the range of motion, the intensity, the speed. Something else can change besides just doing more reps.
Man, now I just can't get over the fact that we didn't define volume on the front end.
At the very least, you can do the same thing.
People are going to listen to the show and they're going to have to go back and listen to it a second time if they didn't know what it was.
Or they could listen to our other episodes where we talk about training volume.
Great idea, Doug.
Thanks.
I'm glad you thought of that.
We had episode 44 and 54. Is that right?
Yes.
And actually, talk about how to adjust your training volume.
Yeah.
Or how to adjust your diet for high volume training, I think was one of them too.
Episode 54 was, adjusting your diet for higher volume training. So, you know, volume is not an isolated thing to change. If you change your volume, you might have to change your sleep and eating and all that kind of stuff. And we talk a little bit about that on episode 54.
Yeah. I think one of the recommendations that maybe actually we didn't say this on that particular show, but how we like to think about sleep with regard to training volume is that For the most part, every day you want to sleep roughly 8 hours. And then for every training session you do that day, you want to add an hour of sleep. So if you train once that day, 9 hours is more ideal. If you train twice a day, 10 hours is more ideal for that day. So that's an easy way to cycle your sleep with respect to your training. Way harder to do in reality than to say just like that, because life kind of gets in the way sometimes. Getting 10 hours of sleep is very unrealistic for a lot of people.
I slept 2 hours last night.
Unless you're trying to be a professional athlete.
I slept 5 hours last night.
Oh, awesome.
3 hours the night before.
Right on.
I know.
I woke up.
But he was traveling a lot, folks.
Yeah. I was flying back from Australia.
I think everybody.
I'm jet lagged as shit right now, actually.
I think everybody in this room probably gets a really good amount of sleep. People are surprised. I was at a conference.
I actually don't know. I'm being fair.
No, you probably don't.
I get like 2 hours of sleep a night, really.
It sounds terrible. I get like 9.
Do what we say, not what we do.
I get like 9. And if I don't get 9, I know it. All right. We'll cut it off there. We'll see you next time. Enjoy talking to you folks about volume. Is there anything we need to do? Talk about. Oh, yeah. Make sure to go to barbellshrug.com. Sign up for the newsletter. If you want information about stuff that's going on, places we're going.
Way Past Strong, barbellbuddha.com.
That's right.
Chris's new book.
New book is out, yeah.
I wrote a book, man. A second book. This one's actually full length, 260-page piece. I think you'd like it. If you're interested.
It's good.
Can I tell people if they're interested where they would find it?
Go for it.
First.
Do you remember?
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, you close your eyes and wiggle your nose in the mirror 3 times and say barbellbuddha.com. Amazon. And Kindle version. So if you've got it, do me a favor, leave a like a little 5-star whatchamacallit. If you've read it, you can do that. Go online and leave a comment.
I probably should. Go on there and leave my review.
Apparently you liked it, right? Are you being honest with me?
Yes, it was very good.
Thank you.
I'm enjoying it.
I'm happy about that. Yeah. So Amazon, it's going to be on iTunes soon for the iPad. They just got the Apple takes a long time to approve it. And of course you can get a deluxe ebook and a deluxe paperback on my site at store.biblebook.com. But they're deluxe because I couple it with a little 2-hour video that's a supporting like bonus strength seminar. So it's pretty cool.
We also have the 6-month muscle gain challenge launching right now. You can go to moremuscle.barbellshrug.com if you want to check that out.
That's a good idea.
You should definitely do that.
If you want to get bigger and stronger.
Only if you want to get bigger and stronger.
I mean, who wants that?
If that's not your thing, don't worry about it. That's not just commercials. Like, warning, this diet supplement is only for those in extreme need of weight loss.
the ones for like if you're in financial trouble, it's like it's only for people who are in more than $20,000 in debt. You know, it's probably for anybody.
This is only for
debt.
People who are really worried about their finances.
Not you.
No.
That's right. All right, thanks guys.
See you next time.